There's nothing that this league has in common with the original XFL. We've focused 100% on really good quality football. We're doing this for the love of the game.
That was Oliver Luck, commissioner of the newest incarnation of the XFL, which kicks off this weekend. Many football leagues have tried to provide an alternative to the NFL over the years, but none have succeeded. Will this time be any different? Plus, who won the NBA trade deadline? I'm Ina Kimes. It's Friday, February 7th. This is ESPN Daily, presented by ADT. Hey, Kevin.
How are you, Mina?
Well, I'm starting to experience a little football withdrawal. Do you think others are feeling that way yet?
I think so. I think this is a week where people, it hits them quickly that football's over.
Kevin Seifert writes about the NFL and the XFL for ESPN.
And it's not coming back again until September. So that feels like a long, long time from now.
Yeah, I know the symptoms of football withdrawal are pretty recognizable. On Sunday mornings, I go downstairs. I just sit blankly in front of my television, staring at it, waiting for something to materialize. I might have a sickness.
There's probably a few people reconciling salary cap numbers in preparation for free agency as well, but those are only the hardest core of the hardcore people.
So, Kevin, I think most people, when they hear the XFL is launching, their first reaction is, why now?
You know, I think it's pretty simple. It's that football continues to be the most popular sport in this country. The NFL is by far the most profitable pro sports league in the country, and people want a piece of it. And there are so few NFL games over the course of 1 year that it feels like there's a big part of the calendar that still has a window open for well-played, interesting football.
And yet, that void's existed, but it's just not worked in the past. I mean, most recently with the Alliance of American Football.
We have breaking news. ESPN reporting the Alliance of American Football is suspending all operations. Here is the update.
Similar logic. They wanted to fill the void, but after 8 weeks, the league went bankrupt. How are they not anxious about that happening again?
Well, the one thing that's different about the XFL compared to really any other alternative league that has tried to come up is that they have legitimate money behind them.
The new XFL will kick off in 2020. And quite frankly, we're going to give the game of football back to fans.
Vince McMahon, the chairman and CEO of WWE, is the owner and financier of this league. He has committed a fair amount to do this. Doesn't mean he is going to spend it all or he should spend it all or that he couldn't pull it back at any time, but it's an important first step to actually have real money behind a league. And so that gives them some confidence that if they make some progress each year, that they'll have multiple years to develop a product. Still, it is very hard, as many people have proven over the past few decades, to start a football league from scratch.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is the XFL!
When the XFL originally launched in 2001 with Vince McMahon at the helm, it felt at the time like an extension of WWE.
If you smell what the XFL is cooking!
There was violence and scantily clad cheerleaders and loud noises, and they were pitting themselves against the NFL, which at the time they were calling the No Fun League, and the XFL was the Extra Fun League. But this time around, they seem to be marketing it very differently.
Very much so. Vince McMahon has been completely absent from the promotional run-up to the season, and I think that's by design. He hired Oliver Luck to be the commissioner, and I think people would agree Oliver Luck's one of the most respected, serious sports administrators in the country in terms of all the different jobs that he's had. They really view themselves, their window, their market as hardcore football fans who are really bummed that football is over. And they need to appeal to those people. They did a study and they came up with the idea that there's 40 million people at the end of the NFL season who would be interested in more football after that. And those are the people that they're focusing on.
I think
there is reasonably a lot of skepticism, you know, around football amongst fans who have seen these leagues in the past fail. How has Oliver Luck, the commissioner, responded to that?
I think he understands. You know, he's well aware that the history tells you that this has never worked, at least in the modern era of pro sports in this country.
We recognize the past, and we've studied a lot of those leagues, and they often come down really to two things. One, they run out of capital. Secondly, making bad decisions. And you know, having a guy like Vince, who's built incredibly successful businesses, will help us, you know, sort of not fall into making bad decision making. I also think, Jeremy, it's a little...
The last time an alternate football league worked was the American Football League, and they ended up merging with the NFL 50-some years ago. And so he's well aware that this has been tried many times, and I think he's fairly humble about the process that they have ahead of them. Everyone who works for the XFL, you know, some of whom worked for the original XFL, know that this is almost an unprecedented situation if they were to succeed. So I don't think they have any illusions about how easy it'll be, but I think they do feel like they've put some things in place that have never been put in place before for an alternative football league.
What is the basic structure of the league?
There's eight teams. There's about 40 to 50 players on each team. They're spread out around the country. Most of them are in warm weather places because this is going to be a late winter, early spring season. LA, Houston, Tampa Bay, Dallas, some of the teams there. DC and New York will be the two that will play outdoors in somewhat cold environments. They'll play 10 games over the next 10 weeks. And there'll be a semifinal the week of April 18th and 19th, and then a championship game on the 26th, which is the day after the NFL draft. And then those players will then be eligible to go to NFL mini camps and training camps if they garner interest.
You said the XFL this time is trying to avoid shtick, but they also are changing a lot of the rules. What are some of the rule changes in this league that have jumped out to you as being particularly interesting?
Well, they very much believe that the kickoff should stay part of the game and be a much more exciting play than it is in the NFL. Touchbacks on kickoffs in the NFL reached almost 60% this past year. It's almost a dead play. So basically what the XFL has done is move the kickoff back 5 yards so that it's unlikely to go into the end zone. And they've moved all the cover people and all the coverage people between the 30 and the 35-yard line. And nobody can move until the returner catches the ball, and then you can start blocking and tackling. And this is a way to dramatically increase the number of returns without sacrificing much in the way of health and safety. They also have done some things with the punt. If you kick a punt into the end zone, it's coming back to the 35-yard line. And if you try a coffin corner kick and it goes out of bounds, it's also coming back to the 35-yard line. So there's a big incentive to go for it when you're anywhere on the other side of the 50. And then point after attempts have changed as well compared to the way the NFL does it. There's going to be no kicking. You either can go for 1 point from the 2-yard line, 2 from the 5-yard line, and 3 from the 10-yard line. And so that will give people a lot more options, certainly a more exciting play than an extra point. And it actually will probably minimize the number of overtime games because you'll have a chance basically at a 9-point touchdown if you go for 3 after scoring.
It sounds like the XFL is waging war on special teams.
I think that they realize that special teams is important, but that for the most part in the NFL, special teams has not been very exciting in recent years. I think fans will appreciate that if you can actually make punts and kickoffs interesting.
What are the players' salaries like?
The average XFL player will earn $55,000 over the course of 10 games, assuming he's on the roster, the active roster for all 10 games. Most of the quarterbacks they signed are getting more than that $55,000. A few of them are approaching the minimum NFL salary that's in the $490,000 range. And the XFL felt strongly, Oliver Luck in particular, that if they were going to devote resources to players' salaries, it should be at the quarterback spot, that so much would snowball from good quarterback play or bad quarterback play or at least credible quarterback play. And so that's why they were paying some of the quarterbacks a lot more money. But for the most part, they're not even close to, say, NFL practice squad type salaries.
Well, along those lines, Could a college quarterback like, I don't know, Trevor Lawrence, who's not yet draft eligible, leave school, go to the XFL and make some money before the draft?
He absolutely could. And that was sort of one of the market disruptions that we wondered if the XFL would try to attempt. Because as we know, in the NFL, you have to have been away from high school for 3 years before you're draft eligible. The XFL does not have that rule, is not bound to it. And so presumably could have recruited Trevor Lawrence to leave Clemson, play a season with them, you know, get a lot more eyeballs on the league. And so that is a paradigm worth watching for future years, if there are future years of the XFL. But this year, they did not choose to do that in a high profile way.
Kevin, what do you think success will look like for the XFL?
Ultimately, the only success for any for-profit business like the XFL or the NFL or anyone else is if they make money. But I think this year's success would be that they get through a 10-game season, and at the end of the season, people can look back and say that was actually a really cool, fun brand of football. You know, one thing that's going to happen is every single one of these games is going to get national television on either ABC, ESPN, or ESPN2, or one of the Fox channels as well. So every single game is going to get measured for ratings. And that will all give us an idea of, are people buying in? The XFL can say that, yes, people bought in, and here's the data we have to prove it in terms of ratings and attendance. Then it'll be a success, and then they can reliably go into a second year looking to build on that.
Thanks so much, Kevin.
Thank you, Mina.
Coming up, the SEC's leader in career completions, yards, and touchdowns joins me to talk about his new role in the XFL. The best teams start with great talent, but finding the right people can be a challenge. I mean, just ask the New York Knicks. When it comes to hiring for your business, ZipRecruiter can help you find the right candidates for your team fast, from healthcare to manufacturing to business services and more. And now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/ESPNDaily. ZipRecruiter sends your job to over 100 top job sites, but they don't stop there. With their powerful matching technology, ZipRecruiter scans thousands of resumes to find people with the right skills and experience for your job and actively invites them to apply. You can even add screening questions to your job listing so you can filter candidates and focus on the best ones. ZipRecruiter is so effective that 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. And right now, to try ZipRecruiter for free, my listeners can go to ZipRecruiter.com/ESPNDaily. That's ZipRecruiter.com/ESPNDaily. ZipRecruiter.com/ESPNDaily. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
Aaron Murray in the shotgun, rolls to his right, wants to throw it to the end zone, and does, and got him, Todd Gurley, touchdown, a third touchdown pass of the game for Aaron Murray.
Aaron Murray played for the University of Georgia and later was a backup for the Kansas City Chiefs. He's now the starting quarterback for the XFL's Tampa Bay Vipers.
Hey, Aaron, thanks so much for doing this.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
Aaron, your Tampa Bay Vipers open up the season on Sunday at MetLife Stadium against the New York Guardians. What's the energy like in practice right now, especially with the new league just starting?
I think it's a lot of excitement. I think, honestly, offensively and defensively, we're kind of sick of just practicing against each other. I mean, we had all, I guess, our OTAs in December for a few weeks. We had mini camp in Houston for a few weeks. And now it's like, okay, let's go against some fresh new faces and go out there and compete a little bit. I know for me, I grew up in Tampa. We had season tickets to go see the Bucs, so I went to a ton of games in Raymond James Stadium, and I would wear my Derek Brooks jersey and Brad Johnson and Warwick Dunn and all those guys, and now I get an opportunity to go play in Raymond James as my home stadium for this season. So I think that's a really cool opportunity. I think we've put a ton of hard work in over the past few months, and not just this team, but all the teams, the entire league, to make sure that it should be a very smooth ride from here on out.
So this is kind of full circle for you, going from Tampa back to Tampa. Fill us in on sort of all the stops you've made along the way.
Yeah, so I grew up here in Tampa and then had the fortunate ability to go on and play football at the University of Georgia. Had a chance to play there for 4 years. Then was drafted by the Kansas City Chiefs, was in Kansas City for a couple of years, and then went over to Philadelphia for a season. I had a great time there, and then the last season was playing in the AAF with the Atlanta Legends. And then this year, obviously, now jumping over and getting things cranking in this XFL.
Aaron, you're 29, so you were about 10 when the XFL originally launched. What do you remember about the league back then?
I remember the kind of, I guess you could say, scrum at the beginning of the game, where it's like you throw a ball out and guys go to fight for it to see who gets the ball first. And I think everyone will remember the nicknames on the back of the jersey. You know, he hate me and all that good stuff. I think that's what stuck out the most about that league was, I guess you could say, somewhat of the gimmicky stuff, not so much the football. And I think that's what the kind of mindset is now. When it comes from Vince and Oliver Luck and everyone involved is, you know, we don't need all that stuff. You know, people want to watch football. This is the same game that you watch on Sunday. You know, we're going to have a little differences here and there. The way the game's played with the clock, the game's going to be a little bit faster. The clock won't stop besides under 2 minutes, both at the end of half and at the end of the game. So it should be a quicker game. They're aiming, I think, for about 2 hours and 45 minutes. So about 15, 20 minutes shorter than the NFL game. A lot of action, go, 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 make it very competitive, make it up-tempo, and should be a great performance from all teams for the fans to go out there and watch on Saturdays and Sundays.
As a quarterback, how does the speed aspect affect you? I mean, are you looking forward to facing some tired defenses in the fourth quarter?
Yeah, I mean, the goal is, I mean, the one difference a little bit, too, is the game clock in the NFL's 40 seconds here. It's going to be 25, so you're going to see a lot more up-tempo offense, trying to get a lot of plays in. Not go too fast that you put your guys out of position. You lose the ability to communicate. So there's still going to be time for that. But like I said, there's still going to be a little bit more of a sense of urgency.
How did the XFL even become an option for you in the first place?
So a little background. I mean, I've been working with CBS for the past few years, doing college football games, color commentary in the booth. So I've had a great time doing that, but that's pretty much during the fall only. So I was like, listen, I don't have much to do in the spring. You know, pretty much all I was going to be doing is golfing every day. So I was like, why not go play a little football? I can lose a couple strokes this year in order to play the game I love and have some fun, be down in Tampa. So I just remember Coach Trestman actually reached out to Mark Richt. And I remember Coach Richt called me, this is a while back ago, saying, hey, there's this new league coming out. There's a guy named Mark Trestman. I don't know if you heard of him. I was like, yeah, of course, I've heard of, you know, Coach Trestman. He said he reached out to me, wanted to know your interest in the league. And I was like, yeah, I don't know about that. And then finally, Coach Trestman and I connected. And like I said, the biggest factor, you know, too, along with it, was the fact that I got to come home to Tampa. You know, I'll lose a couple strokes in my golf game, but, you know, I'll take advantage of this opportunity.
You mentioned you're with the AAF. You know, we've done a lot of reporting on sort of the collapse of that league and the financial problems and how they affected players. What was the end of that like for you?
Abrupt. It definitely was. You know, it was a little shocking the way it just, you know, concluded after whatever week 7, week 8. And, you know, the great thing with this, you know, new league XFL, I think they've taken more time to make sure everything was right. You know, they didn't rush to market trying to be the first one out there. They said, we're going to sit back, observe, learn, continue to make sure our, you know, ducks are in a row, that when we're ready to roll things out, everything's going to be absolutely perfect. And my experience so far, these past few months with the XFL is just that. You know, they have everything ready from the facilities, learning from some incredible coaches, having Oliver Luck kind of run the show, and then being on primetime television every Saturday and Sunday for people to watch. It's just a great mix of a lot of good stuff to make this league extremely successful.
When you look across the league and also obviously your own roster, are there a lot of guys you know or you've played with even?
Oh, yeah, guys I played with both in college. I mean, we have a few Georgia boys here on this football team, guys that I played against in the SEC, guys I played against in the league. It was funny. After practice, just getting changed, and one of the guys, D-Mount, one of our defensive end, he's like, do you remember when I sacked you when we were playing you guys in preseason? I was in Tennessee and you're in Kansas City. I was like, I don't know about that one. And he pulled up the picture. Of course, he found it on Google and said, yeah, here it is right here. I was like, I think I actually completed that pass and then you hit me. So it's good to be on some of these guys' team. I mean, some of them definitely gave me some headaches, both in college and in the NFL.
Well, you know, you work in media. You mentioned you're You know, you got your golf game. Why are you playing in this league?
For the love of football. I think that's what everyone, they love the game of football. And this just gives everyone an opportunity to go out there. I mean, who knows what some guys have had to deal with. You know, maybe you went to a small college and no one really, you know, recognized you. Maybe you got hurt, or maybe you got in the league and you just didn't do things the right way. Maybe you slacked off. Maybe you thought you arrived and you just didn't work as hard as you wanted to. And then we all know what the NFL stands for. It's not for long. You know, it is a true honor and blessing to be in that league. And it's extremely tough to one, get in it, and two, stay in there for a long time. So this gives guys who, like I said, may have had any one of those instances I just talked about in their life, get that opportunity right now because they love the game of football to make up for whatever wrong occurred in their life or whatever missed opportunity they had. And I think everyone's ultimate goal is to win. All of us are competitors, but they also want to get back into the NFL. And this gives them another opportunity to learn pro-style systems, both offensively and defensively, to try to make that dream a reality.
Is that something you aspire to personally?
I don't know. You know, for me, if there's an opportunity at the end of the year, you know, I would evaluate it. I obviously talk with family, my wife, and see, you know, is this something I definitely want to pursue? Or, you know, is this, you know, it? I don't know. I don't know. For me right now, it's just focused on that I'm completely prepared to put myself and my teammates in the best situation to go out there and win some football games. And we have the New York Guardians this weekend. Let's go out there and kick some butt.
Thanks so much, Aaron. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Coming up, we tell you who won and lost the NBA trade deadline. Now you can win a $250,000 home renovation designed by the Scott Brothers and an ADT smart home security system. To enter, just head to ADT.com/pass the protection and tell us what you want to protect. A beautiful home is great, but a safer home is even better. Now's your opportunity to get both. The winner and the winner's home will be featured in an ADT video with the Scott Brothers. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited. Ends March 16th. Must be 18 or over and a homeowner as of February 1st, 2020. To learn more about the contest and read the official rules, go to ADT.com/pass the protection. So we're joined now by Kevin Pelton, ESPN NBA writer and insider. Kevin, I want you to come on today because every time there's an NBA trade, the first thing I do is I go to ESPN.com, I search for your name, I look to see what grade you gave the trade, and then I steal that grade in my commentary so that I sound smart.
Well, that's one approach.
You're a tough grader, so I was surprised to see some A's from you. I guess I'll start by asking, now that the trade deadline is wrapped, who do you think was the biggest winner?
I think it's got to be the Clippers. The Clippers were the one team that did make a couple of trades, one that was just to clear a roster spot. It seemed like the Clippers and Lakers were going head-to-head in maybe a preview of the Western Conference Finals to get Marcus Morris from the Knicks, and it was the Clippers who ended up prevailing. They had the advantage of the fact that they could trade their first-round pick this year. The Lakers don't have any first-round picks that they can guarantee to another team. And it sounded like maybe they weren't willing to include Kyle Kuzma in a trade. But, you know, Morris would have fit either of these two teams. He's an extremely versatile defender, someone who can match up with LeBron James that the Clippers don't want Kawhi Leonard and Paul George having to guard him as frequently. And then someone who's a legitimate threat offensively, is shooting 44% from three-point range this season, fifth in the league. That's maybe a little above his real level as a three-point shooter, but certainly someone that you have to count for defensively.
You also really liked what the Miami Heat did, bringing in Andre Iguodala, shipping out Dion Waiters. Talk to us about what this means for the Heat and their playoff chances.
Yeah, I liked this both now and going forward. I mean, it'll be interesting to see what they get from Iguodala. None of us, unless you've been at the gym, I think he was working out at St. Mary's in that Kevin Arnovitz story that he posted earlier this week, at USF. Unless you happen to be there, you don't know what Iguodala looks like right now because we haven't seen him play since game 6 of the NBA Finals. The Grizzlies just let him stay at home while they tried to figure out a trade, which got a little contentious earlier this week, especially with their young players. But, you know, this ended up being the result that they wanted and Iguodala wanted as well. Where he gets to go to a contender, gets to play in Miami, and then actually somewhat surprisingly signed an extension with the Heat. So he'll stay there next season.
So the other major trade was between Minnesota and Golden State. Minnesota sent them Andrew Wiggins and a couple of picks, one of which is in the first round, is protected. Golden State sent D'Angelo Russell to the Timberwolves, who had long been lusting after Russell. It was a pretty open secret in the NBA. Who do you think got the better of that?
Yeah, this one goes all the way back to last July when the Timberwolves were trying to figure out a way to sign Russell as a free agent, even though they didn't have any cap space. And, you know, the Warriors kind of got in the middle of that. And the assumption all along was that they got Russell in that sign and trade for Kevin Durant to eventually try to trade him. And that's what they've finally done here now. But I like it a lot better personally for Minnesota. They just kind of had to do something. This franchise was going nowhere right now. They have lost 17 consecutive games that Karl Anthony Towns has played. I think their last win with him came before Thanksgiving. He did miss an extended stretch in that period, but you know that's still hard to believe. And Russell's a guy he wanted to play with, a friend of his, and I think that's a pretty good pick and roll combination. Two dangerous shooters. Towns' ability in the post makes it difficult to switch, which is kind of the kryptonite for Russell defensively in the pick and roll. So they fit well together offensively, although they might not be able to stop anyone. Conversely, I don't like it as much for the Warriors. You know, the comparison that's going to come up here is between Andrew Wiggins and Harrison Barnes, who are pretty similar players. And Barnes was, of course, the starting small forward on the first championship team for the Warriors and the next year's team that won 73 games and lost in game 7 of the finals. But even though they're pretty similar players, highly touted guys who have kind of just become volume scorers in the NBA, there are some important differences between the two of them. Barnes is a better catch and shoot option playing next to Steph Curry and Klay Thompson and with Draymond Green. And then the other key thing here is, you know, Barnes, a lot of his value was he was able to slide down to power forward when the Warriors went to the death lineup, put Draymond Green at center. Another problem is they also don't have Andre Iguodala anymore to bring in alongside him when they do that. But Wiggins isn't really capable of defending power forwards like Barnes was.
Well, last question, Kevin. Who's the biggest loser in all of this?
I mean, I think for today, it's probably got to be the Lakers. I mean, this was, you know, again, they were going head to head with the Clippers. These two teams have, it seemed, been on a collision course since last summer when they dueled over the rights to Kawhi Leonard and the Clippers came up the winner in that one as well. They might have one more battle coming in terms of Darren Collison, who retired last summer right before free agency and could be headed back to the NBA. Matt Barnes said on The Jump today that, you know, he thinks Collison is 50-50 to play this season. He's an LA area native and probably would sign with one of those two teams. So it'll be interesting to see if one of them can still make another marquee addition after the deadline.
Thanks so much, Kevin. I'll give you an A today.
It's only downhill from here. Thanks.
I'm Mina Kimes, and this has been ESPN Daily. Our show is produced by Michael Baltierra, Troy Farkas, Alexander Hyacinth, Mike Johns, Sarah Cazzotti, Steve Martin, Ryan Nantel, David Cerosi, Andy Tennant, Eve Tro, Chris Tuminello, and Aaron Vale. I'll talk to you Monday.